Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Thank you for joining us on the Wise Women Media, the radio show. We want to make sure that you catch us online, too, at wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com. We're here on the Be Here Monsters Network every Friday at 10 o'clock. You can see a list of our other sponsors there at wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com. Those include Daughters of Isis, Florida Nature Photos, the Common Projects Network. Here Be Monsters, of course, gives us our allotted time here on their network every week. Power New Media and Public Relations, Roundtree 7, Tarot and Stars, and the Hoodooed blog. We also want to make sure that you see on our blog the GoFundMe link. This is independent media. We are not funded by any corporations. They don't help us at all. So to keep this network running, we need help from you, as this is your radio station. So we have two really important guests tonight. In fact, I think I have both of them on the air. So let me go ahead and pop them in here. One moment. Is that you, Deb? Are you on the air with me now? Hello? I'm going to try the other line here. Hello, Deb, are you on the line with me now?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes. Hi, how are you?
Okay, I thought my phone was possessed again.
It shows that you're on the soundboard, actually, on the board twice. I don't know how that happened, but everybody, this is Deb Kelly. She's going to be telling us about an interesting endeavor that she began. It's going to be the pinnacle of events on September 14th in Tampa. So, Deb, I'm just going to give you the floor and let you tell us a little bit about how this got started, how you got involved, and what's all going to be happening on the 14th of September. I'm really excited, and I'm hoping I can go, but I am working that day, so I'm going to have to try to rearrange the schedule, but I'm going to make every effort to try to be there, but I'd certainly like to promote it whether I'm going to be there or not.
For you to be able to come. That would be wonderful.
I hope so. I hope I can. So go ahead and take it away and tell us all about how everything started for your event and this whole initiative, which really consists of, what, two events a year, is that right?
Actually, this year, for the first year, it's three, and next year I'm going to try to do four. It started by really a conversation with Tampa Picture Show. I was a reporter for Patch West Chase and Carol Wood. And after we concluded our interview, I just kind of asked them why they didn't have spoken word, because that's such a popular program right now. And they told me that they didn't have anybody to do it. And I looked at them, and I raised my hand like I was in grade school, that I was like, oh, my gosh, I'll do it, I'll do it. I had put on fashion shows and talent shows and things like that before, but nothing like this. But I figured, you know, the worst thing I could do would be fail. And, you know, and if you don't try, you'll never know. And I put a call out on social media for talent. And strictly I was looking for spoken word poets. I wasn't looking for anything else. But all of a sudden I have a mind reader who wants to participate. I have a singer who wants to participate. And I decided, you know, I can't just say no, because these people are volunteering their time and they want to showcase their talents. So I decided then and there that I would go ahead and have a talent showcase and have it benefit a local charity. The very first one that we did was just called Life Amplified. It was in January, and it benefited Redefining Refuge, and they fight human trafficking in Tampa Bay. And
right, we're
we
one
had
of the biggest
about
cities, actually, one of the biggest cities and states for human trafficking in the country.
Yes, I didn't know this.
It's pretty sad.
It's a horrible reputation.
We're supposed to be, you know, a tourist state. That's our top industry at $85 billion a year, but yet this is an underground industry that very few people hear about. So, but it is an industry. It's huge, and it too is worth billions of dollars. And Florida is one of the top states. I think California is another one, and there's two others, and I can't remember which ones those are. But it's huge here.
So. Well, the sad thing is, across the United States, there are 100 beds for rescue trafficked children. And Natasha, who founded Redefining Refuge because she wanted to help, decided that she was going to open up a home. And she put a call out, and people volunteered, and oh my goodness, she opened that home. So I'm so excited and so proud of what she did and what she accomplished. And for us to be able to help her just made me so happy, because she's such a wonderful person. And once we finished the showcase, I was walking off the stage. I thanked everybody, and, you know, I didn't really expect anything else, but somebody stood up and said, "So when's your next one?" And I was like, ding, 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 ding,
ding. It took a life of its own at that point, didn't it?
It did. It absolutely did. So I said, okay, would you guys show up if I put on another one? Because, you know, I really didn't know, because this was the first time I ever tried anything. And Tampa Picture Show was so receptive. They're like, yeah, you know, go ahead, go for it. If you can get people, we'll do it. So in May, we put on Life Amplified Stop Hate, and it had an anti-bullying platform, and it benefited Teen Edge, who has a summer program, Camp for Girls, which teaches young girls positivity and self-esteem and anti-bullying and all these wonderful things by strong women in our community. So I was like, okay, that's going to be my second showcase. And it took, I would say, about 3 or 4 weeks to fill the roster for that showcase. And once we completed that one and we had another success, then it just took on a life of its own. And I was working with one of my clients who happened to be on the board of directors for Canines for Veterans, and he asked me if I had wanted to help them. So I was working with them with their website and things like that, because I do that as a regular business. And I realized that, hey, my next show could be for the veterans, and it could help Canines for Veterans. So Life Amplified Salutes was born from really wanting to help out Mike Haley, who is a veteran himself, and he founded Canines for Veterans to help other veterans. He gives these service dogs that he trains himself for free. It's just an amazing location. He has a compound where the dogs stay, and also where the veterans come in and stay for 2 weeks and train and learn how to work with their dogs. And everything that he does is free. And so when I heard that he was risking closing his doors because there's no funding, you know, I jumped at the opportunity to be able to do something. And in the process, we can do a military appreciation event and honor our veterans and our military personnel, you know, it's a win-win situation no matter how you look at it.
Right, right. Now, is this a gentleman local where he lives and does the dog training and the people staying? Is that local to Tampa?
Yeah, it's a Tampa-based nonprofit. Hold on a second. I can open up my web browser and tell you exactly where it is.
That's amazing, because I'd really like for Veterans for Peace to get involved with what he's doing as well. That would be a really amazing effort, I think, on our part as Veterans for Peace. Since I'm the interim chapter person for Veterans for Peace Tampa, we also have an active chapter in St. Pete. So,
yeah, I know he would appreciate anything like that, because what they're looking for is corporate sponsors, because businesses are kind and they donate, maybe they donate dog food, but just like the people who give presents at Christmas time or food at Thanksgiving time to the homeless, but that's all
right.
That they do, you know, there's more days to the year than just those few days, and they really
exactly.
need continual support. Canines for Veterans is located at 907 East 129th Avenue in Tampa. It's over on the Temple Terrace side of town.
Wow. Okay. Well, I will definitely get that information from you, and I, you know, I'll write it down after the show. But definitely, I want to make contact with that person and get something going where he can be funded year round. I think that would be a wonderful effort. Tell us about the event, and I know it's going to be September 14th, Life Amplified, and it's going to be at the Tampa Pitcher Show. Am I right?
Yes, they have been just so generous. They have donated their venue to hosting these different events that I've put on, and we have, for the first time, this particular showcase. I decided I was going to reach out to the community to see if we could do, in addition to the portion of the ticket price going to Canines for Veterans, I wanted to see if we could do a raffle and a silent auction and just see how receptive, you know, the public would be. And, oh, my goodness gracious, we have Mosey, Busch Gardens, Old McMickey's Farm, Glaster Pieces, a clinical massage, 5-over-1 meal plan. One of my realtors donated a check to the nonprofit, a auto repair place that has fixed my vehicle, National Auto Collision Center on Gun Highway, just
right.
wrote out a check for each department and said, oh, yeah, well, we don't want to donate a gift certificate. We just want to help out the charity. So I was like, that's amazing. Michelle Spaulding is like a business guru, and she's donating time. We have Holistic Hypnotherapy by Denny Zen. We have Nut and Better Granola. We have Mary Kay. We have Self-Defense. Personalized Marketing is giving a marketing consultation. Rising Lotus Photography is doing a photo section. I can't talk. Photo session. And ExoPixo is doing a photo session. We have a membership with Local Shops One. Pet Supermarket is donating a gift basket. Wareham Online is doing SEO. Reverend Michelle Glass is doing a psychic reading. Genetics Hair Studio is doing hair. Three's Company is doing hair. Carrollwood Cultural Center is donating a gift basket and tickets. I mean, it's been just, it's mind-blowing to me that everybody just jumped in. We have pizza, we have Sam's Club, we have Fresh Market, Burger Monger, Meltaway Massage, you name it. I probably have a gift certificate or a gift basket from the company. And then on top of that, of course, Tampa Pitcher Show donating the venue, but Brides and Blooms donated the flowers, and we have Kyle Mold. He owns Inner Lens Photography, and he photographed my second show. He's coming back, and he's photographing the third show. And then we have the Art Institute of Tampa, who just joined this week to have Kelly Archuleta, who's a student there, as our volunteer videographer. So, I mean, can you not imagine? This just blows my mind how incredible these people are.
It's barely like you had to ask for anything. It kind of just got all put into place, it sounds like to me. That's just an amazing amazing group of sponsors and people to help. And the silent auction, so how many offerings did you actually get for the silent auction, for instance?
Between the raffles and the silent auction, I have about 31 different offerings.
So people need to know that this event is almost free. $8 will get you in the door if you get the tickets early. And if you come to the door, the tickets will be $10.
Yes,
and all
correct.
Proceeds raised from the raffle and the silent auction will go directly to Mike Haley, is it, for the canine?
Yeah, Mike Haley, Canines for Veterans. Yeah, there is no money, because I'm not a nonprofit myself. I'm just a person who just wanted to do something to help people. And I just want to make sure that they can keep their doors open, because after seeing firsthand what he does and visiting when some of the soldiers were there and hearing their stories and hearing Mike tell their stories, I mean, if you're not wearing waterproof mascara when you go there, be prepared to look like a raccoon when you leave.
I know some of the guys that have been assigned dogs, not just guys, but girls too, but they've been assigned dogs, and some of the times it's not for any physical injury. It's also in addition to those injuries that we can't see, such as PTSD, which so many of the veterans are coming home with now. Can you speak a little bit on that, on what you discussed with some of these veterans and what you saw when you were actually at Mike Haley's place?
Oh, absolutely. One young lady was telling a story about just having night terrors, and until she had the dog, she didn't like going to sleep, and she was just always frightened. But the dog could sense this, and he laid his body across her and helped her be able to sleep. And that was just in the first few days of her being bonded with the dog. Oh, and one thing, really an amazingly cool thing that I didn't tell you, is that the people don't pick the dogs. The dogs pick the people.
So how do they do that? Do they put them all in a room and the dog just selects the person that they feel that they'll be a fit with?
From what I've seen, I didn't actually see it firsthand because she already had her dog when I was there, but from what I've seen from the pictures on his Facebook, on Haley's Canines for Veterans on Facebook, they sit on a chair and the dog comes to them, and they just see how the dog interacts with the person, and they try another dog and see how that dog interacts, and then they try another dog. And it's not just the big dogs, it's also the little dogs, because they can sense things that as we as humans can't sense, and they can save lives because they can smell things on you that if you have something wrong with you, they can tell you. I mean, if your dog is scratching you in a certain place and always going there and always going there for no other reason, you need to go to the doctors and have that area checked, because these dogs are super, super sensitive and super smart. And they help people with the PTSD and also TBI, which is traumatic brain injury. And he's had so many success stories. He has a personal website that I've linked on his blog. On his Canines for Veterans website, and he tells stories about why he does this, and some of those stories are the ones like I was just telling you. They're from the veterans, and it's just so affirming that what he is doing is making a difference. He's saving lives. Because, I mean, he himself came back from the military with PTSD and didn't know this, because at that time there wasn't that type of a diagnosis, and he trained his own dog.
Now, what about people with the military sexual trauma, the MST? Are these dogs helping those people that are affected with that as well?
That would actually be a question for Mike. I don't know about that. I don't want to give any wrong information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be interesting to know if they can actually help, because a lot of those veterans are coming back, too, very, very scarred and needy. And again, these are injuries that we don't see. These are, you know, emotional and mental, really serious afflictions. I feel so badly for these people. When I consider what I went through in the military, I feel that I was blessed in comparison to some of these young people that are coming back now. It's really quite sad. So do you have any ideas for the next event after this one?
Pending the success of this event, each time it depends on how many people actually attend and what the response is. My goal is to have another one in January. And I would like to do it based on actually what you were just talking about for the Crisis Center Take Back the Night. And that one would be called Life Amplified Metamorphosis.
Oh, I like that idea. And also, I wasn't sure if you were aware, but there is a house for military women in Tampa called the Athena House. I wasn't sure if you were aware of that, but you know, I know that Veterans for Peace here in Tampa, we've discussed reaching out to them. We're not sure exactly, you know, what kind of help they need yet, but that's something we're going to pursue. So,
yeah, no, I didn't know about that organization. If you can actually send me information, because I'm always looking for different charities to do this, because it has become a thing. It's kind of grown into a life of its own, and I don't think I'm ever going to stop Life Amplified unless people stop coming. I mean, we've got so many people. This last show filled up in 2.5 days.
Right. Wow. That's a lot.
Yeah. So it went from 3 months now, to
how
like
is,
3 weeks. To...
Is the Tampa Picture Show, are they also doing promo for this?
Yeah,
are they doing, you know, are they helping promote it through their facility since they're the venue?
I'm pretty sure we've got flyers, but I know that they have it on their website, and they also have, they closer to the date, they post on their Facebook.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they're a nice place. I mean, I love that place.
Oh, I know.
And so what do you do in your real life when you're not working on Life Amplified?
Well, I'm a mom of a college sophomore and a wife, and I own my own company, The Right One Creative Services, where I do graphic design, web design, copywriting, and marketing. And I do this pretty much 24/7 when I'm not doing Life Amplified. I kind of live on the computer.
Well, yeah, and you said your young one is a sophomore in college? Is that what
yes,
you said?
Yes, ma'am.
And
yep.
Where do they go? Do they go locally?
Yeah, she was going to USF, but she just switched over to HCC to get the AA out of the way, and then we're going to go back to USF for the rest of the degree.
Yeah, that's probably better. And it's probably a little cheaper that way, too, isn't it? School's gone up.
Oh, my gosh, yes. Well, she's on scholarship, so thank gosh, she's smart.
Yeah. Then she can try to fund a lot of those so she doesn't end up with a huge bill when she gets out, because that's become a ball and chain. Actually, that was one of the pivotal reasons why, the two reasons why Occupy began, the Occupy movement, were the student debt and loans and the foreclosures. Those two things were really what spurred that whole movement on here in the United States anyway. So
I'm
think...
I'm still paying on my student loan, so I know.
You're still paying on it? Yeah, and
when
some people are losing
college.
Theirs. The banks are actually losing them. That can be a good thing.
That wouldn't happen to me.
Yeah, I was the one. I was definitely the one that didn't have my loan lost. I had to pay. Mine was not expensive, though, because I had gone to a vocational school, and college was paid for by the military, and I don't even think the military's doing that anymore. So, I don't know what kind. I know benefits have been cut, but I'm not sure specifically which one. So our veterans coming back definitely need a support system of some sort coming back to the world here. There is no job, so there's no infrastructure there. So I'm sure it's very, very traumatic, and I don't know if I'd want to live that. My experience in the military during these times, I think that would be tough. But I want to thank you for being on the show, and I want to promote this event. And do you have any other ideas on who would need to hear this message? And have you tried to get on the radio and television, or possibly raising enough money so you can buy some spots? I also want to throw out, you know, the possibility of putting this on WMNF as a community event, too.
Oh,
the community radio. You know, I mean, have you checked out any other options of advertising or marketing these events?
Well, I've sent press releases to all the TV stations and the newspapers and things like that that are local in Tampa Bay. Actually, this Saturday, an article is supposed to be coming out in the Neighbors section in the Tampa Tribune about the event. And I believe it's this week, Lighthouse Clipper coupon book gave us a full-page color ad going to all the homes in Carrollwood, like 30,000 homes. They sponsored us for free. So, I mean, I thought that was pretty amazing.
Wow, that is amazing.
Yeah.
Well, what
have you
put a Facebook event page together for the actual event itself? When you go on Facebook, there's like an event page that you can actually put together, and then you can invite friends, and then friends can invite friends as long as you've made the event public, and that might be a way to go too, to spread the word. It doesn't take too long. Yeah, you've got. You've got the regular like fan page that you have to hit like, mm-hmm. but an event page for a specific event, for just that one date is something that might help also get the word out about this. Yeah, about the specific event. I'll email you one of mine so you'll kind of get an idea of. What it should look like and what you can actually do with it, because there's a lot of options, especially when you're inviting people. You have the option of toggling with a drop-down menu and inviting everybody in Tampa, for instance.
Send me that. I'd be really interested.
So it was like you'd have to do one for each event you did, and then you'd promote that event right on your Facebook page. And people could click into that event, or you can say, hey, here's the event page, and they RSVP on it. That's what they literally do, is RSVP on that page. So it works out pretty well.
I will definitely take a look. I will actually look at it when I conclude here. I'm hoping we have, like, a huge turnout, not just for Canines for Veterans, but because we've got Nine and Numb that are going to be there. Have you ever heard of them?
No, tell me.
And if you love improv comedy, like Whose Line Is It Anyway, that's back on television now.
Yeah, I like
they
them.
Then you'll love Nine and Numb. I had the honor of meeting Kelly Clow, who is the founder. He started in another state and then moved down here to do Nine and Numb here in Tampa. And I got to meet them when they were very, very first starting out. So I'm like their stalker fan because I go to every single one of their shows. And they are like the best-kept secret in Tampa. I wish more people knew about them. They're over at Carrollwood Players, and sometimes they're also at Tampa Picture Show. And they're just so funny because it's all improv. It's all suggestions from the audience, and they're going to be our headliner for this event. And then the comedian who was in our show in May is also going to be my MC for this show, and his name is some guy named Frank. And, I mean, we have an 8-year-old comedian, Nicole Lauren. We have a 9-year-old rapper. We have a 10-year-old singer. We have 11- and 13-year-old family of singers. It's really going to be an amazing event. And halftime, we've got a special thing happening, but I can't say anything more than that because it's a secret.
Well, I'll tell you what. This is what I'm going to do. I will go ahead and put the event page together for you, and that will be my little bit of assisting and contributing my time. And what I'll do is I'll tailor make the page to whatever you want it to be, the event page, and I'll also help you invite people. I have like 3 profiles on Facebook, and one has 5,000 people. And, you know,
each time
I have a profile, then Facebook stops me. Like, they stopped me at my first profile at 5,000 people, and they won't let me do anything on that profile really anymore. So then I created a second profile page, which is the one I'm using now, and then I had another one specifically for Occupy. So I have 3 pages floating around and a lot of Tampa peeps on all 3 pages. So I would be happy to donate my time to actually put the event page together for you and then show you how to do it. So when you do the next event in January, you'll be able to do that one on your own. But that will be my contribution to kind of help. And I'll also get in touch with WMNF for you. And I will also send out the information about this event to all of the Veterans for Peace members in this region because I have the list.
Oh, that would be... What are you, Santa Claus? That's awesome.
That's incredible. So I'll be happy to do that. I can do that for you, and it wouldn't take me that much time. I can probably get it done this week. So, yeah, we want to probably get that done before, you know, a week before, at least a week before. But WMNF, a lot of times if you contact them and let them know that you're promoting a community event, they'll do a PSA on it. In other words, you send them the PSA, and mm-hmm. they'll read it when they have an extra 30 seconds. But another thing you can do also, Deb, I don't know if you knew this, you could go to WMNF and actually record your PSA, that they'll just loop it whenever they have 30 seconds of airtime to spare, and they'll put your little ad in.
Wow, you're a wealth of information. Thank you. That's cool.
But that's another, you know, that's just another thing to get the word out. And I'm sure that, you know, WMNF would do a PSA on this since it does involve community. I think it's really important. So we're running out of time, and I've got the other guests lined up here, and I wanted to thank you so much for coming on the air and telling people about this, and I'm going to help you get this going. And if I can't be there, then I won't feel so bad because I'll feel that I've contributed in some way to help, you know, get the event information out there. And
I really love what you're doing,
and I think it's really, as a veteran, I'm saluting you for doing these things. And I definitely want to get in touch with Mr. Haley and his effort, too, with the Canines for Veterans. I think
that would be awesome.
Yeah, I'm just glad that you've connected all of this. It's really quite miraculous. So things happen for a reason. Yeah, Deb, thank you so much for being on the show, and I hope you come back. I'd love to have you come back and promote the next event, too.
Thank you very much.
And I'll be in touch with you in a day or two about all of this.
Okay, and if anybody wants to find anything out, just go to LifeAmplifiedShowcase.com or like us on Facebook at Spoken Word Showcase. Thanks so much, Anita. I really appreciate you putting us out there.
All right. You have a great evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Okay. That was Deb Kelly, and you can see all of her information on Life Amplified. LifeAmplifiedShowcase.com, and it sounds like a great event. We definitely made some connections. I want to introduce our next guest. This is Kimberly McHewiston, a personal friend of mine. We met actually in person very soon after the Gulf oil disaster on April 20th, 2010. We started connecting on Facebook, and then we spoke on the phone, and then we had an opportunity to meet in person, which we did, and we've been in touch ever since. And Kimberly McHewiston up in Alabama is at the forefront of what's going on, anything that's going on with the Gulf oil spill, with the tar sands activities that are going on up there, and really been quite a warrior for the Gulf region. So I'm going to introduce her now. Kimberly, you there?
I sure am, and thank you so much.
Well, thanks for being on the show, and there's certainly so many updates that people aren't hearing about. And, of course, you know, we're being distracted by so many other media stories that really don't count. So I'm going to just, if you want to just give a little introduction of what you're doing now and tell our listeners what they won't hear on the radio or the television.
Well, absolutely. I think I'd like to start out with what's going on with BP at this time and just kind of like update everybody on the trial schedule that will be restarting September 30th. And this is for, you know, the trial with the Restore Act funds, basically. And we remember that the first part of the trial was to identify the causes. And that
right.
lasted 8 weeks. And then that adjourned. And the trial goes in three phases, so we're getting ready to go into the second part of it. And that will begin September 30th. And the second part will begin to determine flow rates, okay? And the second, and then that will last for about 4 days. The second part of the trial is only going to last 16 days, Anita. And this is going to go for 4 days, determining the flow rates, and then the rest of the 12 days will determine the Clean Water Act fines and the penalties that they'll face. And then after that, they'll go into the third phase. And so in between all this mix, there has been a BP page go up, and this appeared in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and the Washington Post of BP calling out claimants on fraud. And go ahead.
No, I saw some of this. Actually, in you know, some of the things on Facebook that people were circulating, and they came out on Twitter. If anybody goes to Twitter, I kind of let them have it with a bunch of posts. They said, if you, this was from BP, and they said, if you believe that there's been fraud, call us at this number. And I said, the only fraud was you. And then I think I hashtagged FUBP or something like that, and I thought, oh, my
exactly.
God.
Exactly, and that's what,
shut my
in
Twitter
a regional
down. That's
Gulf
was...
Coast response, we had
oh
a Facebook
God.
Event that was called Scam Wow, BP Fraud, you know, and one day of calling up and calling out BP on their fraud against the Gulf Coast and the Gulf Coast people.
Right.
And so it went pretty successful. It actually got a lot of media attention. And so, you know, now we're into this second phase of trial. And, of course, they're going to appeal. And, you know, it's going to drag on. And how long has this been going on now? And the really tragic part of all of this, Anita, is the illness that has just gone rampant on the Gulf Coast, and now we're into chronic illnesses, cancers, the neurological problems, and it's just very sad to watch your friends, your children, your family members just be sick. And, you know, we don't have real great health care here in Alabama, Mississippi, and even in Louisiana. I mean, you know, you got a few good teaching hospitals in Louisiana, but to be able to afford to travel, people just don't have that kind of income down here. You know, census
bills. Well, I'm going
to,
before you go on, because I want to ask you some specific questions about health. And for those
sure.
of you that are listening, I am a licensed medical professional. I'm not too high up on the totem pole, but I'm not stupid either. That's for sure. I've done my own research. And
right.
me and many, many other medical professionals throughout the Gulf region, when this first began, we said there's going to be sicknesses, illnesses, cancers, leukemias. Oh, my goodness, I lost her. So if you're listening, Kimberly, just give a call back. But somehow she was dropped off the line. But in any case, we said this in the very beginning, that people were going to be sick. And nobody believed us. We were called alarmists. We were called conspiracy theorists. And it's proven true. If anybody goes back to any of the archives, you'll find my interview with Dr. Wilma Subra, who's also working on the Assumption Parish sinkhole, in addition to documenting cases of the ill and the illnesses that are happening in, I would just call it the oil alley of the Northern Gulf region. And she told me in that interview, it's documented, recorded, that 300,000 people are reporting to her. 300,000 people, a little over a quarter million. So this is a huge number. And here she is. She's back. Hang on, Kimberly. Okay, I got you back. Boy, I wonder
if
you disconnected.
Yes, and I have no idea why that happened. I am on my landline.
Me too. I'm on my landline as well. So I don't know what that, you know, who knows? But all I know is I was kind of giving him a background of illnesses, and Dr. Wilma Subra has said that there's 300,000 people reporting to her, and it's on one of my shows because I interviewed her.
Absolutely.
So we're talking about,
Wilma,
I'm going to ask two questions, Kimberly, that I think the listeners want to know. Okay.
Okay.
So I'll ask the questions, and then we'll go on to the specific illnesses. Is the well still leaking?
I don't know.
Okay.
I honestly don't know.
Reports that it's still leaking, that it was never, that they were actually showing, BP was showing us a well that was not in any way related to the Macondo well.
I've seen those, but honest to God, I could not tell you, you know, if it is or if it isn't. I don't think anybody knows.
The biofuel industry, which is supposed to be being started within the Gulf of Mexico, do you think a lot of these old abandoned rigs are being used experimentally for the biofuel farms out there?
Do I think that? I just know facts. And what I do know is that the federal government has a program called Idle Iron. And here off the coast of Alabama, we were having serious problems. You know, we already have a depletion of our seafood. And our seafood is not healthy to eat. I would not eat seafood from the Upper Gulf if you paid me to eat it. And the Idle Iron program is the federal government's way of getting rid of old rigs. And so what they do is they blow them up. And when they blow them up, they kill everything. They get what they call an incidental take permit, and that allows them to kill anything within that rig area, okay, that abandoned rig area. Now, what you have to understand, and the listeners have to understand, is those old rigs are artificial reefs. So there you have all that wildlife, all those dolphins and red snapper, all kinds of fish, all kinds of little sea critters that have created their home, their habitat within that bottom of that rig. Okay, because those rigs act as the artificial reef, and they're blowing them up. And that's why we right now are getting a lot of fish kills. The fish kills that we're getting in Alabama right now are, you know, they've conducted, you know, necropsies and everything, and their swim bladders are blown out, their eyes are blown out. It's a blunt force trauma type, you know, fish kill. And so, you know, there is interest in Congress of stopping this program. As far as the biofuel program in the Gulf, I don't know that much about it as far as it's actually happening. It may be in the planning stages, but what I do know is that instead of wild-caught fish and wild-caught seafood, they're looking at fish farming in the Gulf and actually using GMO models, you know, within the fish farms. And that is very scary because you cannot put a wild population in with a GMO population or have those two together.
I would not, excuse the French, but I would not eat the shit. Okay.
No, like I stated, no.
Yeah.
The other thing that came out with the seafood, and it's real interesting, all the stuff we were saying 3 years ago is now coming out in scientific fact.
Right.
And when the FDA was doing their little sniff tests and, you know, smelling the seafood to make sure it was safe and claiming to America through BP commercials, through their own media, that everything was safe, we now know that it was 3,700 and sometimes, you know, 700 and some, you know, higher levels than what was accepted with PAHs. So
people that are listening, the shrimp is being hatched without eyes. The shrimp colonies are collapsing. The oysters from Apalachicola are collapsing. I wish Trisha could give me the word of the specific cholera and the Vibrio bacteria that were actually in Apalachicola, Florida. But if anybody's eating seafood, and then if you think that you can get safe seafood at the store, think again, because everybody goes, oh, you know, tilapia is okay because it's farm-raised. And I went to get some tilapia earlier this week, not for me, for my partner, because he wanted some tilapia, and I looked at the bag and it said, of course it said made in, farmed in China, and
right.
It said tilapia.
Or Asia,
and,
Indonesia, wherever.
But tilapia and carbon monoxide. What the hell are they doing putting carbon monoxide in packaged, bagged, frozen fillets of fish?
I know.
Freak. So I didn't buy it, of course, and I said, you know, carbon monoxide, isn't that what people poison themselves with when they're in the car and the windows are up and the garage is closed? I thought,
right.
Oh, this is bizarre. I was just, like, freaking out over it. Okay, Joanne in the chat room says, sad but true, the only hook on this story is how it affects tourism. So the stories about tourists getting flesh-eating bacteria are the headline grabbers. And she said,
well,
nobody
right.
cares.
And there have been a lot of tourists over here in Alabama. They've kept it pretty quiet in the media, but I do know reports out of the local hospitals is that there's been quite a few infections. The ones in Louisiana have been probably the major headlines.
Right, right.
Because Louisiana
and
was always ground zero, okay? And then the oil spread out. It took from the time Macondo blew on April 21st, it took it 6 weeks to get to Alabama, Florida Panhandle shores just by the way the tides were drifting and also the fact that the Crexit was being sprayed and used subsea. So it took those big, you know, gobs of orange goo to get here 6 weeks after Macondo blew. And when they did get here, they got here in great amounts.
I think the most revealing information lately was the 60 Minutes show that came out of Australia.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, we had wonderful friends and partners work on that.
Yeah, we had Rip Kirby, which I think is from USF, but he did the initial research on the Corexit and actually
right.
knew that it was embedded in the skin, and once it's in the skin, it's in your DNA. But he's also taken the tar balls and done, you know, he's doing... I guess experiments to see how long it takes for the Corexit, the poison dispersant, to break down, and
right.
it has proven that they are in the tar balls. But,
oh yeah,
you know,
and
that don't know.
Well,
Corexit,
over a year and a half ago, mm-hmm. Alabama Coast United, my organization, myself and Michelle Walker Harmon, you know, who works with me, we got the Auburn study, and that's what came out first, that the Vibrio was in tar balls. And we realized, because my background is nursing, we realized that, okay, our first high-risk population is children, pregnant
exactly,
women,
yeah.
The immune-compromised, and the elderly. So we made flyers, and this was back in April of 2012. And we took them down to all the beach pavilions, all the public beaches, and posted flyers about warnings with the tarballs and the Vibrio. Nobody listened to us. And
no,
then all of a sudden, you know.
Right? They were in the water.
Right. You know,
yeah.
And so, you know, you put the word out. What can you do about apathy, Anita?
Yeah, there's nothing you can do. There isn't.
Josh
says
you can
in
put
the
information
room,
out there, and whether people listen or not is a choice.
Right. Josh put a link in the chat room, and I'll put it on the blog later. It's from Oceana, and it says that the well was leaking, I believe. From the link, I can see that the report was from December 2012, and it says oil still leaking from Deepwater Horizon site.
Yeah, and they've sent three rovers down there and keep saying that it's not. That it's come, actually, where they're saying it's coming from is the rig itself. So my question to BP is, why are you leaving the garbage on the bottom of our Gulf?
Right, exactly.
If the oil, Macondo oil, is leaking from the sunken rig, why don't you remove that rig?
Exactly, yeah. It's bizarre.
You know,
it's bizarre logic at the very beginning, you know?
Right. Well, it's
Joanne
because
says,
of the regulations out there. There are none, basically.
Yeah,
you know,
Joanne,
Congress.
Go ahead.
You know, Congress never changed anything after BP. There were no laws enacted, so they're pretty much allowed to police themselves still.
Right. Yeah, it's they can. They can basically do anything they want with impunity. I mean, it's just, it's crazy.
Disgusting, more or less.
I wanted to mention that Joanne had said, much like the coal industry, any abandoned equipment is not subject to law because they consider abandoned equipment to be idle. Laws do not apply. And she said, sadly, the American public is blind to the facts of GMO farming and toxicology reports. And then Josh says, apparently the CO is used to make meat and fish look like it's fresh. Oh, the carbon.
Yeah, and that is true. I do know they do that. That's like we're off subject, but I do know they do that with ground beef.
Joanne also said, And her mother's German, that's why she knows this. There is a German phrase, Massenverdummung. I don't know if I'm Massenverdummung. It says it means stupidification of the masses. Mass media publicizes propaganda aimed at the masses designed to stupidify the population. Boy,
absolutely.
Nothing could be more true in this respect. Of what they've done in the Gulf and how they have just... I mean, we were there at Hands Across the Sand, Kimberly. This was several months ago. I think it was in June we did it, or May. I can't remember.
May. It was May 18th.
It was May this year. And we did, because the two previous years, I think, or three even, had been in June. So we did it, and there were people that didn't even... We went up and down the beach to talk to people to say, hey, join us, you know, just for Hands Across the Sand. It'll last 15 minutes and, you know, get your picture taken and it'll be a statement against, you know, big oil. And they looked at us like we had two heads on us. It was like,
I know.
Who are you? You know? And they were in the beach.
Right.
They were on the beach in the water. Their kids were swimming in the water. The dogs were in the water. I thought, okay, whatever. And I thought, why am I talking till I'm blue in the face for years and years and years?
Well, because you have to keep talking because, you know, especially in a tourist area, you know, it's kind of like they're on vacation and they are immortal. You know, they're on a quest, and it's difficult when you have that kind of industry going on. But the thing is that this whole process of the extraction industry coming into the Gulf and basically trying to take the Gulf as their own is a destruction to the tourist industry. And I know that Florida depends definitely on tourism. I mean, that's Florida's economy.
Yeah, it's our number one industry.
And, you know, where I live on, you know, the coast of Alabama, that's our industry. And I'm sorry, you know, fossil fuel and oil and tourism and water just don't mix. They don't mix. And one will kill and cannibalize the other.
You know, it's funny, this article that Joanne just linked in the chat room, of course, I read it earlier this week. It came out on August 20th. I think you probably saw it. It was in the Tampa Bay Times, and the title of the article was Oil from BP Spill Pushed Onto Shelf Off of Tampa Bay.
Right, and that's from those plumes that they said, you know, you remember Terry Hazen saying, oh, no, there's no plumes in the Gulf.
But Craig Pittman, who is the environmental writer for Tampa Bay Times, says right in this, they found, in this article, he says, I'm going to quote him, they found nothing in 2010, but when they went back in 2011 and 2012, they found what Weisberg had predicted. The oil did not reach the southern end of the shelf until last year. Water samples collected from the shelf were toxic to bacteria, phytoplankton, and other small creatures, the report said. Well, I'm going to call bullshit on that, okay? The reason being that we did a test, and you remember this, Kimberly, we did a test with sand from the beach in Sarasota.
Right.
And we did that test in September of 2010. And it came. It went up to your to the lab guy in Alabama, and it came, the results came back to us. And you know who I'm talking about in regards to labs, because he's near you in Alabama. And it came back at 173 parts per million. And I emailed that report to everyone. Almost everyone got it. Media all throughout Tampa, environmental writers, including Craig Pittman. So everybody had the information, but they would not report it. 173 parts per million. So I'm calling bullshit on that part of his article because that's not true. He's saying that.
And it wasn't true. It was never true. Everything from, I would say, 2010 until about 3 months ago that came out on media was very, very biased towards the extraction industry and, you know, all rosy, everything good. And it's been probably within the last 3 to 6 months that we're getting real science and real results coming out of the Upper Gulf. And the results we're getting are not good. And I am very, very concerned about Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama. I think we're going to see a collapse. And, well, we're already seeing the collapse. And so you're going to continue seeing a decline in the health of the wildlife, a decline in the health of the people. And, you know, hopefully we won't just totally collapse up here, because if we collapse in this part of the Gulf, it's going to spread.
Tell us, let's shift from the Macondo well at this point, from the Gulf oil volcano, I like to call it, because that's what it is and was.
Right, it's a disaster.
Let's speak a little bit on the Louisiana sinkhole, and and also what's happening in Mobile and what you're working on now, because it seems like the whole northern end of the Gulf region has become a real serious sacrifice zone. And I think a lot of people that live in the Gulf region don't even really know what's going on. So why don't you kind of inform us on both of those?
Okay. Obviously, finally, the Bayou Corn sinkhole is getting some national press, and this is pathetic because these people, there's, you know, 150 families that have been evacuated since like August the 12th of 2012, and we're way past that now, so it's been over a year. And only when people get images of dramatic trees and earth sinking into a hole, then they start to react. But
right.
The whole thing with the Bayou Corn sinkhole is that national media has not stated who caused this sinkhole. And it was industry, and it was Texas Brine Company. And I want to put that out there. It was not a natural thing. This was caused by Texas Brine Company, and what they had been doing is they were drilling down into a salt dome, okay, to get fluids for drilling.
Right.
You know, the salt and fluids for fracking and drilling. That's what their purpose was there in Bayou Corn. And they drilled into this salt dome, and, of course, once a salt dome is drilled into, it starts to disintegrate and melt. And, you know, that's what caused the sinkhole.
Right. And Joanne has also chimed in on the chat room saying, you know, the Louisiana sinkhole where Texas Brine buried nuclear waste in the salt domes. So, you know, these
people
that were evacuated.
It wasn't. Hold on. There were caverns inside the sinkhole. We don't know for sure what kind of permitting went on because down here in the South, the permitting, it's ridiculous the way the permitting goes down here. There's payoffs, there's payouts, and, I mean, there's no real regulation whatsoever from any environmental protection, anything down here.
Mm-hmm.
On what is stored underground. Now, I do know Wilma Subra is monitoring what is coming out of what I call the stinkhole, and it's not good. Now, as far as what is actually buried in those underground caverns, it's a mix. It can be radioactive, it can be hydrocarbons, it can be methane, it can be all that kind of stuff. We got a mixture coming up out of there. It is not safe, period.
It's like mixing bleach with ammonia. Oh, my God.
Absolutely. Now, you know, they've evacuated 150 families. They can't go back to their homes. They're not getting proper buyouts from Texas Brine. And old Bobby Jindal sits on his, you know what.
Right. And does nothing.
And touts
yeah.
his agenda to the Republican Party. So I don't even want to go there with that.
Now, Michelle says the entire practice of drilling and storing toxic substances in salt domes is crazy. And she said they buried nuclear. Joanne might know something more than we do because she's ex-intel like I was. So, and she got out of the service just recently.
For all I know, during World War II, God only knows what they put down there.
They buried nuclear waste in the salt dome 10 years ago. She says now it's collapsing. So, obviously, she says she does know for a fact that they buried nuclear waste in that particular salt dome 10 years ago. So that
okay.
That is freaking me out just thinking about it. And then she says it's all about the money. The politicians won't acknowledge any problem that doesn't have to do with tourist dollars. So until
right.
we make enough, nothing will happen. It's pathetic that nothing has happened on the Bayou Corn sinkhole for almost 2 years. Has it been 2 years? Has it been that long?
No, actually it started on August 12th of 2012 when it started caving in.
Okay, but were there signs of
we
it before that?
We just celebrated. Well, I don't even want to say celebrate, but the first year anniversary of the sinkhole was August 12th.
So I think they saw it bubbling before that. So they knew something was going down, but they weren't sure what. There were some.
Right.
Because I remember
and
looking
nothing
at,
had caved in, you know.
No, nothing had caved in, but there was bubbling and there was stuff being coming up in bubbles. And I remember seeing
those. Yeah, what they call burps. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I saw those videos in the beginning, and I don't know how long that time frame was until, you know, everything started collapsing. But everybody knew it was going to happen.
Well,
that's
absolutely. And, Anita, I'm not an expert on Bayou corn. You know, that's almost 400 miles away from me or 300 miles away from me. But I keep up with it. And I do know, you know, dates and what happened. And, you know, it's getting national attention now, whether or not that'll do any good.
All they showed was the trees going down. But like you
right.
said,
you know, we have a very, very repressive regime and rule down here. So information getting out is difficult. You know, the media is pretty much bought. And so, you know, it makes it very hard to get these issues put to the forefront.
Tell us about what's happening in Mobile in regards to the tar sands, because I know that is...
That is the big one. That with all the BP stuff going on, and I have to remind people that, you know, with every wave, we have tar balls washing up on our beaches here. You know, people are so sick here. And even myself, my son, you notice I'm a little raspy in my voice. You know, we have a collective thing down here on the coast that we have thyroid nodules now. And so they tend to affect our vocal cords. And, you know, that's the chilling effect of mixing a toxic chemical of Corexit and oil together. But on top of all that, we have a governor of Alabama, Robert Bentley, and the governor of Mississippi, Phil Bryant, who have now merged into a partnership to explore tar sand mining in northwestern Alabama in the Hartsell sandstone area of Alabama and the eastern part of Mississippi. They actually want to mine tar sands. And in the meantime, we found out in November of 2012 that ARC Terminals, Canadian National Railroad, and Chevron Refinery in Pascagoula, Mississippi, went into a partnership to transport and ship tar sands oil here in Mobile.
Wow.
Yeah. And so being that we were behind the eight ball and we had found out about it after the Mobile Industrial Board had approved tax abatements and tax exemptions for expansions of tar sand tank farms on Blakely Island on the Mobile River, you know, we're kind of like behind the eight ball trying to get in front of it, because when all this stuff was passed was in 2011, when guess what we were doing? Fighting the BP oil spill.
Right.
So it was a giant shell game, you know, and that's the way I look at it. You know, you're distracted by one thing and they're doing another. And so just to make this perfectly clear to the listeners, the governor of the state of Alabama, Robert Bentley, only moonlights as a governor. He accepted the position in January of 2012 as the chairman of the Interstate Oil and Gas Compact Board.
Oh, how convenient.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And the other part of all this with the trains and the tank farms and right on the Mobile River is that they have now decided that they want to run, well, they didn't now decide it. It was decided back in 2011 that they were going to run a pipeline from 10 Mile Terminal in Mobile to Chevron Refinery in Pascagoula. One problem. It passes through. This tar sands oil pipeline, hazardous material pipeline, passes through the Big Creek watershed, which is the municipal water supply for the entire city of Mobile.
Huh. Oh, my God. That's like an accident waiting to happen.
So what we've been able to do is we've formed kind of a coalition that every activist in Alabama right now, in lower Alabama, has been able to get the city of Mobile, the county of Mobile, all the outlying cities to get municipal water to pass a resolution saying no to this pipeline. And the water company, which is called MOS, it's the Mobile Authority, Mobile Water and Sewer Authority, is fighting the pipeline company, and it's Plain South Cap. And it's an LLC, but it's a company out of Houston called Plains American Pipeline Company. It's one of their shell companies up here.
Mm-hmm.
And they have tried to claim eminent domain on the municipal water supply for Mobile.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, this isn't going to happen. The people know about
We're not going to let it happen. So right now, the drinking water for Mobile is safe because this stuff is tied up in court. The pipeline's delayed. The pipeline is actually 70% complete from 10 Mile Terminal to Pascagoula. What's standing in the way is the municipal water supply and a real great brave warrior in Semmes, Alabama, and her name is Mayor Judy Hale. And she is holding Plain South Cap to the line on every regulation of every city ordinance, as far as land disturbance, as far as silt fencing and building this pipeline. If they don't have it right, she has a stop work order.
Good.
And
good.
So what we're trying to do now is prevent any more of this pipeline going in.
Right. This is going to be one hell of a fight, that's for sure.
You know it is, because they have already spent, according to them, $145 million.
Yeah. And if it doesn't go through, they're
in,
probably
this
out
thing
that
was,
money.
This thing was approved by the Alabama Public Service Commission, okay, in Montgomery, without any public hearings in Mobile.
This is what they're doing down here in Naples, too. They're getting these permits without any public input.
Well, they're getting the permits through the Army Corps of Engineers, and they're called nationwide permits.
Oh, interesting.
Okay,
so
and they don't, unless it's an individual little permit, they don't have to have public hearings. They don't have to have environmental hearings.
So they've fixed the laws.
But if it's on a nationwide permit through the Army Corps, and this pipeline was through the Army Corps, they don't have to do that. And
the thing about
so
it is,
what it's created here, Anita, is the politicians have taken it up. And unfortunately, the way the politicians have taken it up, we are about, 4 days away from local elections here.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's become a campaign issue. And, that can be good, that can be bad.
Right.
And, you know, but hopefully policy, we may affect policy in the state of Alabama as far as how these things are done. I mean, common sense tells you, you do not put any kind of hazardous material through your drinking water supply, your only drinking water supply. And the other thing is, their source of the oil is coming from the trains coming down from Canada.
Right.
So if we can stop the trains, stop the tank farms, they will have nothing to put through a pipeline.
Now, there's some comments in the chat. Josh has mentioned there's a news article out of Mississippi today from the Clarion Ledger that states that they're looking into storing nuclear waste in the state. So that's from Mississippi. Joanne had mentioned create a petition on petitions.whitehouse.gov.
Well, we actually do have a petition going on right now here in Mobile, and that is Save Our Drinking Water at iPetitions.
At iPetitions, yeah. Because if they run those, if they run anything through that water, that aquifer, it's just a matter of time.
Well, actually,
before,
here in Alabama, it's a lake. It's a freshwater lake. It's Big Creek Lake.
Yeah, it'll end up being a, there'll be a spill in it, and then all the water will be tainted.
Well,
it's
right. And that's the reason that Moss and the city of Mobile County, you know, we passed all these resolutions saying no. It's in court, so,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's going to have to be decided upon if Plain South Cap can continue. So we've got a delay, and the original projection for the project was November 1st, and we know we're costing them money every day. Every day,
oh, yeah.
Oil isn't, you know. So as far as action goes, we have a lot of action planned. And I will just say on the radio that every day we can cost them money, we will.
Yeah. That Joanne mentions if a petition reaches a set number, the government has to answer. When you do the ones on the White House, they have to give some
right.
kind of.
But you got to understand this is a state issue.
Right.
And it's going to go to the state first. And who is our governor? He's the chairman of the Oil and Gas Compact Board. So this isn't the keystone here.
No, it sounds like it's sealed and everybody's in everybody else's pocket. That's what it sounds like to me.
Well, it absolutely
is.
And it isn't a sealed deal because we're down here fighting it. I mean, I have been involved in the last 2 weeks in four actions. And we have actually gone to the lawyers for Plain South Cap, who are actual residents of Mobile that have to take a bath and drink in the drinking water, and ask them to drop Plain South Cap as their client.
What is the link to that petition, the one that you've got?
It's on iPetitions.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and oh wow, I'm gonna have to find it. I can give you the website, and it's on the website.
Yeah, just send the link to me in an email, and then I'll make sure it gets circulated down here.
All right,
but
there is a website, and it's called tarsandsoilmobile.com.
Oh, okay. Well, then there's probably a link on that.
Yep. Everything you need to know about this, everything I'm talking about is on that website.
Well, listen, we've only got a few more minutes, but I want to thank you for being on the show. I know that you have sick family members and that you're sick yourself in regards
right.
to what's been happening as far as the Gulf region being a sacrifice zone, so many
well,
people
it is. I mean, if the oil companies and the extraction industry had their greatest wish, that would be the Gulf of Mexico. That's what they want.
Yeah, and this is they're creating a wartime situation, but they're always going to be the winner. It's almost, they're winning the war by propaganda, disinformation, by locking everything.
Well, I wouldn't say they're winning the war, because there is a lot of truth out there, and all you have to do is, you know, get away from your TV set. Go on the internet, do your own research. The greatest thing I can say to the American public is get off your butt, get off the TV, and start researching this stuff yourself.
Yeah.
You cannot depend on the national media. You cannot depend on your local government, your state government, you know, or your federal government to tell you the truth.
Well, Kimberly, thank you so much for being on the show. Of course, we've had you on before, and we'll definitely have you on again to give us updates. All the links that we discussed, the petition and the website and everything, I'll make sure that they go up on the blog post on wisemoneymedia.blogspot.com. Don't forget to hit us up on GoFundMe to keep the show on the air. And we'll keep you posted on any new developments, and we'll definitely bring you back, Kimberly, so you can fill
us in. Well, thank you so much, and I hope that this was helpful.
Yeah, and prayers go out to your family. So I want to say good night. I'll close us out with another Melody Gardot song, and just say prayers to all, for all the sick in the Gulf region. And for our Gulf of Mexico needs to be saved. And I'm not sure if we're going to be able to do that as a people, but we can certainly pray.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Have a good night.
Thanks.
And here's the song, Melody Gardot, Who Will Comfort Me?
Come back.